Hello, hi, I'm David, and I did this work with my lab mate, Michael Anderson, and my advisor, Kurt Koitzer. So what's the problem? Well, SIMD's arrived on both the desktop and the mobile. As we see here on the left, we have NVIDIA Tegra. This has four cores, four wide SIMD. And on the right, we have Intel's Ivy Bridge that has four core and eight wide SIMD. They both are there. You know, with these SIMD units, there's potential for order SIMD width speed up, but programming difficulties have led to relatively little adoption outside of efficiency code. I think we probably want to do more than memcopy and memset with these things in the future. So we're proposing a methodology of just-in-time specialization to automatically generate SIMD instructions from a high-level Python representation. So here's a quick example of what we're doing. So on the left, we have matrix multiply written in Python, three nested loops. Pretty straightforward. We run this in Python interpreter, 1.4 megaflops. So I think we're talking late 70s, early 80s kind of mini computer performance, maybe. We add our decorator, Python decorator. So this kind of hijacks the whole execution process. So instead of going through the interpreter, it goes through our framework. You know, the big point here is that if we can't do anything for this loop nest, it's going to go right back to 1.4 megaflops per second. Like I said, it just shows up there, the TFJ decorator, same code, but with the decorator. And now we get 36 gigaflops per second. So I think we're sometime at least in the mid-90s, or mid-2000s of hand-tuned code. So you might be asking, why the ridiculous name? Well, this mountain is Three Finger Jack. It's in the Central Cascades of Oregon. In my system, it has three backends, a GPU, a CPU, and a custom processing engine. So everybody, if you like flops, you probably like GPUs. You got a multi-core. I mean, if you have a GPU, you have to have a multi-core. You have to have a CPU to drive it. And then most of the members of my research group are recovering design automation researchers. So high-level hardware synthesis is also part of this whole work. But today, I'm just going to talk about targeting multi-core CPUs. So the question is, well, why target loops? So there's been a handful of work in the last 5 years trying to make languages like Python faster for your run-of-the-mill programmer. Most of them have focused on MapReduce-style frameworks. In particular, my research group, Brian Canzaro, worked on a system he called Copperhead, which compiled, it was a MapReduce-style framework that compiled down two GPUs, NVIDIA GPUs in particular. But when we started looking at Python 3, remove this whole reduce keyword from the built-ins, the language. And you know, if you want to build a MapReduce style framework, it seems like, you know, reduce would need to be kind of a first level thing in your language. And the rationale behind it was pretty straightforward, and these are straight out of the Python 3 release notes, that we've removed reduce. We put it in this function tool reduce if you really need it. However, 99% of the times an explicit for loop is more readable. That's the Python developer's perspective. That's my perspective. Other people probably have a different opinion. But having worked with a couple of these MapReduce style frameworks, I'm going to stand by that statement.
So quick question.
Yep.
Is the reduce
shift on a Python programmer, is that basically the full operation, or is it more akin to the reduce of MapReduce, where there's a sort step in the Okay, so the question there is, how is it in Python versus how is it being presented in the frameworks, these productive parallel programming frameworks? It's much more like Fold in what Copperhead does. If you were to ask someone who is very evangelical about Python programming, they might have a different opinion. But I know how it's done in Copperhead. So we chose to build our framework using for loops and extracting parallelism with compiler analysis techniques. So this is a little bit of a back to the future approach. I think a lot of these algorithms kind of came out when this movie came out, so maybe this is an appropriate icon. You might be thinking to yourself, well, Python as an optimization target, and if you go online and they present all of their AST, this is pretty complicated, and you know, what if, you know, the state-of-the-art commercial compilers can't do much with C or C++, how could they do anything with Python in all generality? Well, we did what any good researcher does. We punted, and we've thrown away everything that we can't efficiently handle. So if you're not using dense loops with subscripted variables, we can't do much for you. But if you are, hopefully we can make your program run a lot faster. So our parallelization approach is actually very similar to the classical algorithm that Randy Allen and Ken Kennedy presented. The one problem with this algorithm is that it's really designed for vector machines of the 80s. In particular, you could have non-constant stride, locality was less of an issue because you had many, many, many memory banks. Unfortunately, our cache-based chip multiprocessors today need a whole lot more locality for performance. So we've modified this algorithm to find unit stride memory accesses. So you're going to have a hard time using ARM's Neon or Intel's AVX without unit memory stride accesses. And we also have changed some of the heuristics and loop reordering to be profitable on a multi-core. Because otherwise, you know, we could find parallelism, but it might not be profitable without the right loop reordering. So how does this whole thing work? Well, we start off with an application written in Python. That Python decorator gives us access to the Python abstract syntax tree. We run that through our front end, which does a little bit of semantic checking, syntax checking, and it also serializes the AST. The great thing about this, it's all implemented in Python, so the whole thing remains in Python to this point. Then we feed it into our reordering engine. So this is all these great, you know, 1980s algorithms with our little bit of modern day secret sauce on top of it. And then we have kind of a black box code generator here. And I'll explain that a little bit more in a second. And all of this is implemented in C++. And this all gets linked into the Python interpreter as a shared object. And then finally, what comes out of our code generator is hopefully fast parallel code. So the entire compilation happens at runtime. This is JIT parallelization and vectorization. Nothing here is done statically. That makes this much easier. For those of you that have looked at papers where people try to statically compile MATLAB, they're full of type lattices and all kinds of hard things like that. We don't have any of that here. It's just a simple check. Makes it very easy. And it makes it a pretty small, reasonable amount of code. It's about 13,000 lines for the entire analysis engine and about another 9,000 lines of Python in the front end. We've been asked how to support more irregular control flow. So we've been working on if conversion for a while. The interesting thing about if conversion is we have this nice partitioning between what's implemented in Python and what's implemented in C++. A big part of if conversion is actually simplifying your predicate stack. Something like Quine-McCluskey runs very slowly in Python. So we're looking at moving forward with if conversion, how do we do it quickly and how do we do it fast enough so that this whole dynamic JIT parallelization style still works? Question? Sure.
You constrain like the state information, mm-hmm. But ultimately the reason why you go for like tag lines and so on is because no matter how you express it, it's still gonna be the same as that
block. Sure.
But you mean you did the source.
So we did it for
you end up being
resource. It's pretty brittle, but if you don't put something in there that it supported, it runs thousands of times slower. So you get immediate feedback to the programmer that you should change your program. To something with four loops. I mean, if
you're using Python to begin with, or your special language stack is reconstructed.
So the way I like to see it is that, you know, most of these big, we'll take something like building building some kind of computer vision system. There are great libraries out there in Python for computer vision. OpenCV's front end, it's fantastic. You know, getting my frame off the web camera, doing some simple image processing, all of that's handled. I have a little bit of secret sauce. So one of these big ideas in that community is something called deformable parts models, and that basically boils down to doing a sliding window convolution all over your image. So you can see that. Really easily expressible in some dense nested for loops. We want to do this quickly and easily. We want to do it in, you know, we want to use all these libraries, and then we want to code up in maybe six deep nested loop this whole big person detector. And our system really enables those kinds of applications, and the performance is good. I mean, it's reasonable enough. I didn't have to go through, code all this up in C++. So that's what we're really looking for, those kinds of things where we already have a whole bunch of great libraries out there and we just need to put our last mile secret sauce, and we want it to run within minutes instead of weeks or months. Yes, that is exactly what it is. That is exactly what it is. This is a part of a larger project at Berkeley in general. They called it CGIT, which stands for Selective Embedded Just-in-Time Specialization. The powers that be chose Python as our language. We wanted to start with MATLAB. The MathWorks, not particularly kind, letting people get into the internals. We chose, you know, Python because it has great libraries.
So one quick question. So what happens if I write my code and I screw something up from your perspective and say you can't actually compile it? Do I get a warning or is it just about, molasses?
You do get a warning. You're supposed to get a warning. That's the idea. The idea, and it's still a work in progress, is I think when you look at most commercial parallelizing compilers, you either get no output or lots of output. And flow dependency at line 19 probably doesn't do much for your run-of-the-mill, run-of-your-mill programmer. So we're still trying to make it interpretable by mortals. Okay. So any more questions on this? If not, go on to some evaluation. So our evaluation involved five variants of several kernels and applications. So, starting off with what we think we should be comparing to, naive Python libraries for the same type of computation if it exists, and then finally, the naive Python run through our system. But for the skeptics, we also will compare to untuned C++ and hand-tuned C++. So untuned C++ is C++ with scalar optimization, the compiler cranked up to 0.3, all of that, but no manual parallelization, either vector intrinsics or multi-core type stuff, OpenMP or pthreads. So then we evaluated TFJ on two different platforms. So on the desktop, Sandy Bridge, i7, four cores, eight threads. It's got AVX, it runs at 3.4 gigahertz. And we use LLVM 3.1. We use the MCJIT, so that's their latest and greatest machine code generator for code generation. We find that it works well in practice. In our mobile system, we have a PandaBoard ES. This is an OMAP 4460. That is a Cortex A9, two cores, two threads, four wide SIMD. It's Neon, 1.2 gigahertz. We do source-to-source translation, generate a shared object, and link it all back into the Python interpreter on this platform because MCJIT, as of the last couple of months, hasn't been particularly fast on ARM. And we use single precision for all of these because Neon only supports single precision. So we took a look at a handful of kernels, vector-vector addition, kind of the canonical data parallel benchmark. It should achieve memory bandwidth bound performance, matrix multiply, an oldie but goodie, it's everywhere. And an efficient implementation, a very efficient implementation should be compute bound. A diagonal sparse matrix vector multiply, I mentioned earlier about computer vision type applications. This comes out of Horn-Schunck optical flow, and that's one of the classic formulations of optical flow. And then finally, we took a look at the field, kind of the heterogeneous computing field, Rodinia in particular, and pulled out the back propagation weight adjustment kernel, and you use that to train neural networks. So here are our kernel results, kind of plotted on a logarithmic scale, sorry about that. That factor of 10 in performance that you usually see between ARM and x86 kind of bites you here. But when we look at our kernel results, I think for the bandwidth bound type kernels, such as vector-vector addition, diagonal sparse matrix, vector multiply, and the back propagation weight adjustment, we're pretty close, I think, to whatever the best may be. In general, that's probably the hand-tuned C++. And for the compute-bound matrix multiply, we're in the ballpark. So of our hand-tuned C++ on the desktop, we ran Atlas Blaws. That's an auto-tuned based approach. And that gets about 112 gigaflops. The Blaws that comes pre-canned with our version of NumPy gets about 71 gigaflops, and we're doing just under 36 gigaflops. So, as a speed of light, this is pretty reasonable, at least in my perspective. MKL or something like that. I'll mention that a little bit later. So then we looked at two applications. So content-aware image resizing. So the big idea, remove the boring parts of the image. So we have something like this, a lot of boring stuff happening in between. We want something like that, where we just have the person in the castle. This uses convolution and dynamic programming iteratively to remove unwanted connected passive pixels. These are the actual kernels. I'm running a little behind, so we'll just skip over that. And then speech recognition. This is pretty exciting. It's a hot application. Everybody, loves Siri, hates it when it doesn't work, but they love the idea. This is how our speech recognizer works. GMM evaluation, HMM search. The GMM is dense linear algebra, effectively. It's about 60% of the runtime. We took a speech recognizer written at Berkeley, rewrote the core in Python so that it would work with TFJ, our system. 85% of the runtime is spent in kernels that we accelerate with our system. And we're going to evaluate it with 60 seconds of audio, and we can internalize that just a little bit, the next slide. So yes, less than 60 seconds implies real-time performance. So here are our results. So seam carving here, we have the on both platforms. TFJ, our system, runs in about 7.1 seconds to remove 750 seams from that image I showed you before, and that's about a 2-megapixel image. Our hand-coded monstrosity runs in about 4.6 seconds on that platform. And we're similarly pretty close on the ARM platform too. We're doing really well on speech recognition. And I think what's exciting here is that when I started graduate school at Berkeley, I spent a lot of time working on tuning speech recognition in order to achieve real time. And our system is almost able to get that. So we're running in 64.5 seconds on 60 seconds of audio, which is really pretty exciting to me. Yep?
So the performance of untuned C++ and your system seem like ballpark, same order of magnitude. It's not like a very different between the bars. And I was wondering, because you restricted Python to 4 or something, is it a lot easier to write these things in Python than it would be to write those same 4 loops in C++?
Oh, yeah. I there's strip, like in these, I'm strip mining it. I'm doing manual interchange. I don't think GCC might claim to do loop interchange. I have never seen it happen in practice. So, yeah, it's a whole lot easier to write it.
Okay,
so that
actually is a lot easier.
Oh, even when it's restricted. Yes. Okay, so we're close to real time on mobile. And then taking a big, step back and saying, well, how well are we really doing? If we were going to throw away all the productivity benefits and just focus on performance. So this is just a quick little single precision 2048 by 2048 matrix multiply experiment. The naive thing in GCC, you get under a under a gigaflop per second. You turn on the vectorizer, it doesn't do any better. The secret here is that you actually have to manually do the loop interchange to get any performance out of GCC 4.7, I think. ICC, a little bit faster in the first place. Turn on the vectorizer, get about 16 gigaflops. Turn on the vectorizer, then let it go crazy with multi-core parallelism. You get to just over 60 gigaflops. Our system, with all said and done, is just under 40 gigaflops. So that's about 65% of ICC's best performance. But, you know, MKL was mentioned earlier. I think MKL gets about 250 gigaflops on the same problem. So maybe, you know, perhaps compiler-based optimizations are limited to a certain performance level for the foreseeable future, but we don't really see that as a problem because, like I mentioned earlier, this is part of this whole CGITS style of programming, and we can for the kernels that do work well with our system, we can compose them with other specializers and libraries when needed. So what have we demonstrated? A high-performance vectorizing and parallelizing JIT framework embedded in Python. This is a quick summary table. It's in the paper, so I won't speak to it here. We have a lot of work in progress. We're building more backends for more targets. OpenCL, that's a good one to have. We can also use LLVM's targets for PTEX and RV600 too. So Chris Dasanovic's group, they've been building vector thread processors for a while. Nobody's really tackled programming them, so that's what we've been doing, building targets for these vector thread processors. And then more support for regular control flow, if conversion. We're trying to integrate this with the existing CGITS frameworks from Berkeley, in particular Schwabe Camille's work on ASP. And then finally, we want to build more applications using our system just to really see how well it works. So, if anyone has any questions? Hit it. That's a good question. So I'm going to rephrase it. It's kind of, I take a very restricted subset of Python and optimize it, but because it's so restricted, how often is it just not easily expressible in what I'm doing in my system? So I guess taking a step back, everything still remains valid Python, the whole kind of application code. And tuning numerical kernels, while it's it's a field in and of itself, but doing the naive thing is usually very straightforward. You're going to get crappy performance, you know, you're going to get a gigaflop, but you can write three nested loop matrix multiply. But at some other level, you have some big application that's going to be calling your matrix multiply kernel. So with our system, it's still remains possible to use all these great Python features to architect your application, but then you jump into these kernels where you can write, you know, the naive thing and get pretty reasonable performance. And that's what I'm going for, right? I think writing big programs is hard, but when compilers can optimize specific kernels, that makes for a happy developer. And you know, the question is, well, why not libraries? Libraries just flat out don't exist for all of these things, particularly, you know, fast blahs on ARM, running the tuning process takes forever, you know, things like that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe the question is that the way to use it yourself,
yes,
is to keep it kind of firewall loop on the code where you only do that one task and nothing else, and that's how you get the benefits without getting lost.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit like the, you know, Unix methodology, small tools for a specific problem. there is a kind of ecosystem of tools like this being developed. I chose dense LoopNest. Other people have done other things. And they really stretch a whole taxonomy of approaches.
So let's thank our speaker again.